Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Josiah Osgood. Uncommon Wrath, How Caesar and Cato's Deadly Rivalry Destroyed the Roman Republic. We now begin the new rivalry with a new player. His name is Pompey. He's a man who was successful under the dictator, Sulla, and is now seen as a great general. He wants a triumph. Pompey looks like a man who is disposed towards Caesar's part of the understanding of the rivalry. Strength, military success. The wounds on your body are only in front, the only noble wounds you can have. Professor, who is Pompey to Caesar? Who is Pompey to Cato at this point? What does he represent to them?
Yeah, so Pompey is a major personality. In a way, he really was the number one man in Rome at this point in time, when the rivalry began between Caesar and Cato. And he'd gotten his start quite young. He'd sort of broken all the rules and had risen to the top in civil war. And then he fought these various wars. He fought against piracy, which was plaguing the Mediterranean. And then he went to the east and sort of became the Roman Alexander the Great. He actually came back to Rome claiming that he had the cloak of Alexander himself, and he was going to wear it in his triumph, in his parade through Rome. So this is that idea of dignitas, of standing. And as if he were a king almost, like the great kings of the East. So Pompey was popular. He, by suppressing piracy, helped, for example, the grain supply of Rome. So Caesar had kind of played along with Pompey, had helped, tried to support him in various ways early in Caesar's career. They had a bit of a falling out, though, because, at least allegedly, Caesar slept with Pompey's own wife during Pompey's long absence. And one thing to know about Caesar is he was notoriously Rome's greatest lover and had affairs with various women. So Pompey came back to Rome and divorced his wife. And, you know, under these circumstances, it's a question if he and Caesar are going to continue to work together. So let's talk about Cato and Pompey for one moment here, too. Cato really distrusted Pompey. He viewed him as one of these strongmen whom he wanted to stop. So he tried to block various proposals on behalf of Pompey, you know, that Pompey should get to wear special triumphal robes for the rest of his career. So Pompey comes back from the east. He's going to get the triumph. That's not really in doubt. But the question is, will he get all of his new arrangements passed through? And there Cato managed to cause problems for Pompey by blocking things in the Senate, which sort of needed to rubber stamp Pompey's arrangements in the East.
Pompey is a significant player in the Civil War, but what we learn is that he's no great intellect. He's certainly not argumentative in the fashion that Caesar and Cato are, but he represents someone who both Caesar and Cato battle over. They each try to persuade him to their side. And early on, Caesar's more successful. However, Caesar has his own problems. Remember, he's been off winning military honors in Spain. But there is trouble at home, and the trouble begins with a new player whom we need to introduce, because these two are nothing if not plot heavy. And so there are subplots coming in all the time that you need to follow through on to understand how they fall out so profoundly in the Civil War. It is called the Bona Dea scandal. It turns on Caesar's wife, Pompeia, celebrating once a year, I understand, where all the significant women of Rome gather together. No men are allowed, and they go through secret rites. Well, there's a rascal named Clodius who decides to dress as a woman and crash this party. Professor, Clodius is not entirely believable. At this point, what is he to Cato? What is he to Caesar? Did they disregard him or did they treat him as significant?
Yeah, so this really is where history is juicier than anything, you know, even a television writer could come up with. I mean, who could invent such a plot? So Clodius was a young patrician trying to establish himself, but he had a transgressive streak. He sort of liked to do the most outrageous things. And one thing he decided to do was to crash this ceremony, the all-women ceremony, being hosted by Caesar's wife. And the story was that he and Caesar's wife were even sort of starting to have a love affair. So obviously this was highly embarrassing for Julius Caesar, right? To have sacrilege in his house, right? If a man appeared at these rites, it would offend the gods, and that spelled trouble. But then also his wife, right, apparently taking up with a lover, even though these affairs, as we've been saying, were very routine. So Cato saw a chance to kind of embarrass Caesar, to needle Caesar. And what he did was pressed for Clodius to go on trial, for there to be a trial of sacrilege. And this kind of highlighted the embarrassing situation for Caesar. Caesar wasn't really at fault in any way, but it was just a humiliation. And what he did very famously was actually he decided to divorce his wife. And people said, aha, Caesar, well, that shows you know something happened. And he came up with one of history's greatest equivocations. He said, no, Caesar's wife must be above suspicion. So the idea was, well, I'm not acknowledging anything happened, but even for there to be a breath of scandal was too much. So Caesar, that's sort of how he wiggled out of the embarrassing predicament. He found himself in there, and that was kind of Caesar's strength.
There's a trial of Clodius, and Cato now gets involved and causes himself trouble by being what he really is, which is presumptive and arrogant and condemnatory. It involves jury bribing. Was this routine in those days? You bribed juries, you bribed senators, everybody accepted it, and the man who paid the most won?
Yeah, so there are quite a few allegations of bribing of juries. Clodius, really, in my opinion, was guilty. I mean, there can be little real doubt about this. And he had a flimsy case. And adding to the sort of deliciousness of it all, Cicero actually had evidence. He came as a witness and sort of broke the alibi Clodius was trying to float. So we have a very scathing letter of Cicero, who said it's very clear what happened. Clearly, Clodius got to the jurors, and he offered them favors, money, in exchange for enough votes to acquit himself. Cato definitely seems to believe this, because he started pressing for anti-bribery measures after the trial.
And the anti-bribery measures, I just want to establish, those did not exist before this moment? Does Cato invent the idea?
Yeah, so there are different types of bribery. There's electoral bribery, but then also this bribing of jurors. Some of them were liable, but actually not all of them, for complicated reasons. And Cato was trying to toughen up these laws. He didn't actually succeed in this particular quest, but what he was calling for was quite reasonable, actually, even though he was doing it, obviously, for political reasons as well.
The trial ends with Clodius getting off from the charge that he was guilty of, but these are families that know each other. They intermarry, and we have to mention at this point that the intermarriage gets sort of head-turning, because not only do they marry women whom they then don't much have to do with, but they marry off their daughters or their relatives to other men whom they want to work with or at least establish a rivalry. And it gets confusing. You need a chart, but we need to mention at this point, has Caesar taken up with Servilia at this point, Professor?
Yeah. So Caesar, adding to this rivalry with Cato, Caesar, of all people, his favorite mistress was Cato's sister. And Cato was sort of ashamed, disgusted about this. And her name was Servilia. She was patrician. She was actually Cato's half-sister, technically speaking. And this sort of really added salt to the wounds for Cato. His own sister, you know, would sort of take up with his greatest enemy.
Importantly, she has a son by her first husband, Marcus Brutus. Who is her son?
Yeah. So from her first marriage, she had a son, Brutus, and her husband, Brutus, died in that in an episode of civil war. So she was trying to raise this fatherless son. And this, you know, was not so uncommon anyway, but especially after the civil war was more common. And she was a powerful figure in her own right. And part of why she would take up with somebody like Caesar was that this was one way she could help her son. And in fact, later on, we know that Caesar did favors to help out young Brutus because of his fondness for his mistress.
And we can presume that everybody in room know everything about this all the time. And you need to have a scorecard to understand how these men and their wives and their daughters and their grandmothers, and in Caesar's case, his mother, were very powerful decision makers, maintaining these rivalries and these connections through generations. However, there's one alliance that we're going to come back to explain, and a new player on the field, a man who is extremely adept at gathering fortunes. His name is Crassus. He's played by Laurence Olivier in the very famous movie Spartacus. So picture Laurence Olivier as the man we meet next. The book is Uncommon Wrath, How Caesar and Cato's Deadly Rivalry Destroyed the Roman Republic. Josiah Osgood is the author. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.